Welcome to another interview session of the Reckless Dice podcast. I'm your host, Lester Crowe, and with me I have an incredible contributor to Liber Fanatica, UC Alarachio.
Well, that was a very, very nice achievement with pronunciation, Lester. Thank you very much for inviting me to your show.
Thank you. I try. I love Finnish, but I'm very bad with language, that's for sure.
I think that the most important thing is to say juicy rather than juicy. It's kind of
Yeah, I can see that. I bet a lot of our American listeners might get a lot of help out of that little piece of information.
Yeah, but so you know, I don't really get too bothered about my last name, because that's something that Finns usually kind of also like to get wrong, so no problem.
All right. Well, let's just jump right in here, and I'll start asking you some questions, okay?
Sure.
All right, so first of all, I'd like to know, how long have you been participating in Liber Fanatica?
Well, I jumped in with Volume 7, and that was basically just artwork, although I did eventually do some art directing, also got some other artists on board too, but basically I was just cannibalizing my own gallery for the internal illustrations, and made the cover, of course, and the layout. That was, I think, halfway the process, so that's when I came in.
Yeah, so everybody who is very interested or excited about the layout of these magazines, it's UC who does it all. So that's the reason we wanted to get you on an interview here really bad. We think you're an excellent contributor to the community. So what were your duties exactly on Liber Fanatica 8?
Well, as you can see from the credits page, I kind of meddled with all kinds of things. That was basically because making a volume with a theme tends to require quite a lot of coordination, and kind of you need to pull things together. So I decided I would try to help Sean as much as I can to make the volume feel like it's a unity, even though there are many kinds of things. So of course I started with doing some illustrations, but at the same time I was already writing one article, but in the end I actually wrote two. And then I wanted to have a more structured proofreading process, so I asked Sean to get some proofreaders on board, and then coordinated this kind of team of proofreaders and critical readers to really kind of polish the writing and try to tie the different articles together.
Yeah, it really shows. The issue is it's amazing. It's getting better and better each time.
Yeah, I'm actually getting a little bit nervous about the next volume, but I think there are some brilliant things that are already kind of emerging there, and a kind of flood of new contributors, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to accomplish here with these interviews, and we've been doing a couple different reviews. Like our last episode, which will go up probably by this weekend, is a complete interview, or it's a breakdown of Liber Fanatica, of the eighth issue of Liber Fanatica. So this is kind of a question. I'm going to try to get you to pitch Liber Fanatica to the crowd out there. Why should people be excited about Liber Fanatica 8?
Well, I think with this kind of a product, the fans can really kind of address perhaps some problems with commercial products. So, for instance, in Volume 8, have all kinds of nice articles with quite a lot of detailed information that you wouldn't probably get in some of the third edition official material, because of course they have their own pressures with publishing, so they tend to not perhaps provide so much detailed information on certain aspects of the world. Also, we are kind of more in freedom perhaps inventing some interesting new paths to explore in the world. And obviously, all the new original artwork should probably be something to look for. I think in Volume 8 in particular, we tried to make most of the artwork actually link very organically into what's being presented to the players, so you can really show the images to the players as a GM.
Yeah, it's fantastic. The artwork is great. I really like that. So how long have you been an artist for?
Well, I think it's always been a dear hobby of mine, but I think it took until I got some kind of more digitalized tools and just to get all the color as I like to have it, because I never actually did any traditional painting with oils or did it very little. I usually just drew with the pencil. But I really wanted to have color, and nowadays it's kind of really a simple thing to paint in something like kind of a traditional style, but you use digital tools. You don't have to set up a studio to make a painting, just to start up your computer and pick up a digital pen or a mouse and run with it.
Yeah, it's incredible what you can achieve with those tools.
Yeah, those basically just revived my hobby. So I think I've been doing digital art for 2 years now, or 2.5 years.
That's fantastic. It just looks great. I am floored at the professional quality of Libra Fanatica. Like, 7 was very good as well, and I really like the art in that, but it's just the issue 8 is like a little bit, it's like a cut above that, and hopefully it can continually progress and become a staple in the community.
Yeah, thank you, Lister.
Yeah, no problem. What would be your favorite article in Libra Fanatica 8? And you can choose yours if you'd like. Because I personally think your article is fantastic, the one about social interactions. It's got a lot of good GM's tips in it.
Yeah, I think I like that one quite a lot, but I must say that the quality of the articles is astounding. So I think Ricard's article on justice is fantastic. I love the way he adds some fluff text mm-hmm. to his articles. Also, I think Ralph's articles are also very, very useful. The piece on trade, it must be something that probably took ages to write and test, but I'm glad that it's already play tested also, so should be a wonderful tool for players who are interested in trade. But yeah, I think all across the board, the adventure by Sean and basically everything is kind of something that I would use as a GM as soon as I get my hands on a campaign that involves the criminal mm-hmm. element.
Yeah, it is. It's really, really, all the articles are strong. I wasn't surprised at that, because I mean the people who are involved are definitely very passionate. But I was actually surprised at how professional it looks. Some of the stuff looks better than some of the stuff that is produced for cost, you know. So I think it's a bright future for Liber Fanatica for sure.
Yeah, definitely, and I can see that many writers that have contacted us for Liber Fanatica 9 clearly have seen that development and want to be part of it, and it's fantastic. Now we have some veterans of the Warhammer fantasy role play. Doc Thulhu, for instance, was a proofreader in Liber Fanatica 8, and I think he's a wonderful writer also.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's really great. It's my understanding that he helped Sean a lot on the adventure. Like, Sean had the full basic idea and he like built the adventure, but it's my understanding that Laurie or Doc Thulhu helped him with kind of.
Yes, he came in to give some constructive criticism and language editing. And I must say that he's brilliant at what he does. If you hand him your article, you will get so many great suggestions that it's just. He's someone that can really kind of help you push your material further.
Definitely. You can find his stuff on, like he runs a blog called The Daily Empire, and you can find that. I'll put links to that in the show notes. I'll also put links for your art page too, your Undermountain art page, so people can go check out your stuff and see precisely what it is that you do. Because, I mean, every single piece of art in Liber Fanatica isn't actually titled with or signed, right? So you can tell the styles if you know who the guys are, but I definitely want to put a link so people can check out your art.
Yeah, and in fact there are pieces where artists collaborated. So, for instance, the layout is kind of sprinkled with Roger Barnett's wonderful vignettes and border arts, and also there are some pieces where Roger and I were kind of collaborating. And for instance, the cover, the middle, the circular stained glass pacing in the middle is actually by Roger, while the rest of the cover is by me.
Interesting. That's cool. I like that when artists, I just like it when people collaborate. I mean, community is the best way to, you know, to drive development, I guess, or to find enjoyment in our hobby. I like that about Liber Fanatica 8 is that it's like a stage for contributors or for people who play these games to kind of step into a development role or to, you know, produce something for everybody as a whole. It's really great. I think Jay said it best when he made Jay Hafner, that is, he made a response video for Sean and he basically just said, it's a lot of hard work, but people love you for it. And I thought that was really poignant. I thought that was a really good, really good point. All right. Well, I'm going to kind of move away in the questions from Liber Fanatica and just move into more general Warhammer stuff. How long have you been interested in Warhammer Fantasy?
Well, I think ever since I saw the first miniatures in the late 80s, I actually tried to make something of a board game with my cousin in the late 80s, but then, of course, there were games like Hero Quest.
Yes.
And that's very, very kind of fond memories about those games. Eventually, I think we bought Blood Bowl, played that, but it took quite a while before we started the Fantasy Battles. And then from that, we tried the Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay first edition for a brief moment in the late 90s, but then it took quite a while until I returned to the Old World with the second edition, and that was 4 years ago. And after that, it's been quite intense role playing. Actually, I had a pretty long pause in role playing in general until I got the second edition, and then I must say I was a little bit suspicious when I saw the third edition or the first promos of the third edition, but then I decided to give it a try, and I think it's has really revived the interest of my gaming group to role-playing games.
Yeah, I have a very similar experience in the sense that I basically was defeated in playing role-playing games because I had been so saturated with the D20 products, and that's was pretty much my experience for like 5 or 6 years role-playing, and I just got sick of it. And then I was searching for a new role-playing game because I kind of wanted to get back into it. It had been a long time since I played, and I, unlike everybody else, I had played Warhammer Fantasy the second edition a little bit, and I'd played lots of D percentile games before, the 2D10 games, and I thought they were cool, but it wasn't until I read the first promos for Warhammer Fantasy, and it had been out for about 6 months when I first stumbled upon it, and it just, the idea of it blew my mind. And then once I got my hands on it, I mean, they got me hook, line, and sinker for sure. So what are your thoughts on the current state of the third edition?
I think it's a pretty well-rounded system now, finally, that we have all the kind of expansions to the core set. But what I really would like to see is a long campaign. I was a little bit disappointed with Blackfire Pass, and not because of the quality or anything like that, but because the adventure there seems to be a bit of an introduction really to the theme rather than a kind of a longer journey. I think I'll have to expand that one a little myself, but well, at least they do provide quite a lot of ideas and tools for expanding it, so.
Yeah. Well, I just barely picked that up today, and I was flipping through some of the material, and it looks like it's pretty well written. There's lots of good art, but I was under the impression that the inventions were going to be a little bit more inclusive. They were going to cover a few more areas, but they only cover, there's only like 6 inventions or whatever. But I mean, I haven't read the book yet, and as far as I know, as far as I understand, it really encourages you to create your own, which is good. So what would you say are Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay the Third Edition's biggest strengths?
I think the kind of an intuitive feel to the mechanics. To me, it was never an issue of mechanics when I changed from the second edition to the third, because I didn't really feel that the second edition could kind of provide such a variety of different kinds of situations like the third edition does, with very little kind of mathematics or it's quite a fast moving system once you actually kind of organize the game, because it takes a while to organize all the cards and bits, and perhaps I even tried to include too many of them in my first sessions. But at the moment, I'm kind of getting quicker and quicker with them. And for instance, all kinds of action scenes really seem fast, and you can really pressure your players to making quick decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I really like about the party tension meter.
Yeah.
So with that being said, what would you say are the biggest weaknesses of the game?
Well, perhaps there is also the other side to these cards, is that they may become a little bit confusing. for the players, especially if you're not playing, for instance, every week or several times a week, because it kind of requires quite a lot of focus from the players to be able to use all the actions creatively during the game. So they actually do have to be kind of comfortable in their characters, and sometimes it seems like they think about which card they should be using instead of role playing. So because I have several first timers in my group, this is a bit of a problem sometimes. But I can see that more experienced role players are very quick to adapt themselves to these systems, or perhaps it's just something that you need to have more experience to use all the bits to their best potential.
I definitely feel like there is, I don't know if it's necessarily a learning curve, but it is, there's a point at the very beginning when you're introducing people to this game where you have to make sure that you teach them how to use the bits constructively and quickly, like you said, because once that happens, then it's very quick, because a lot of the burden on the game master is lifted, because he doesn't have to know every single action and its capabilities, because the players actually have the rules right in their hands.
Yeah.
And I like that about it for sure. But I do agree. I would say that the amount of organization required could be considered a weakness, although I find that it's been helping me a lot actually get organized, because I'm notoriously bad at organizing things.
Yeah, that's pretty much my own view on it. I had some trouble with systems like Role Master, just because every time I started up a game, I would have to kind of go back to the rules and kind of rehearse it a little bit. With this system, I don't really have to prepare for long. I can just focus on the story.
Yeah, which makes it, that really helps add that pliable feeling or whatever. It's very very fluid, I find.
Yeah.
Once people understand how to use the bits, then it becomes very easy, and that shouldn't take more than a session of, like, a really solid session of teaching everybody how to use them. All right, well, what do you think, apart from a long campaign, as you touched on earlier, what do you think is essential material that FFG should be focusing on for the game in the future?
Well, I think that, of course, it's a little bit problematic with the background material, because so much of it was published with the second edition. So if they, for instance, I've seen that in the forums people would like to see some sort of an Imperial Gazetteers or something like that, but if that was made again like Sigma's is, that would kind of be a bit of a repetition for someone like me who has all the second edition stuff. But I would like to see more of places kind of fleshed out, like Übersreich. I think that was a very, very good thing to do, to have a place that wasn't really well detailed before the third edition. Maybe one of the counties could be described in more detail, like Arverland could be one place. I haven't really found anything about Arverheim, for instance. Maps and all kinds of things like that would really help.
Definitely.
But otherwise, I'm basically just really appreciative of any material that they publish.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of like a waiting game now, to wait till they really announce anything new. Yeah. I really think that a long campaign is on the horizon. I think what they're doing is they're building up to the Storm of Chaos, and they're going to run a campaign. I think it might be even similar to the second edition campaign, which was like Terror in Talibheim, or you know, how they had, there was the four that focused on the four major cities in the empire. You had the one in Altdorf, the one in Talbheim, the one in I can't remember, the Rock. Where Ulrich lives. Middenheim, yes, that's it. Yeah, but they, you know, like you were saying, the stuff is detailed, so anybody out there who wants to know more about the Empire can pick up a copy of the second edition, Sigmar's Heirs, it's called, and it goes into quite a bit of detail on the different areas of the Empire. But I still would like to see something like it done in the nature of Warhammer 3rd edition. I mean, I have Sigmar's Heirs, but I would purchase a supplement that, you know, maybe had a fold-out map in it and had some information on the different provinces, like you said. Because I like the way that they go about it in 3rd edition, where it's actually quite high level, and they don't need to really put more than, you wouldn't need to write more than a page or maybe a two-page spread for each province, and you could put, they put a lot of information in those small books, which is very impressive to me. All right, so to close here, I was wondering who your favorite artist is who's been involved with Warhammer, and that can be in any capacity. That can be writing or doing artwork for the Battles game, for the role-playing game.
Yeah, I would say Adrian Smith. I really like that kind of rugged feel to his paintings, particularly dwarves, but also demons when he paints these huge demonic creatures. They really look terrifying, and also I like the detail and the kind of for instance dwarf anatomy in Smith's paintings is really kind of how I picture dwarves, missing teeth and really kind of a little bit kind of psychotic expressions in battles and all kinds of really kind of enjoyable little details. But he also is wonderful in how he composes his images, so they're kind of really enjoyable in many levels.
Yeah, he is a fantastic artist. It's crazy. All right, well, thank you so much for coming online. Everybody appreciates that. I'm sure our listeners will be interested to hear this interview.
Thank you, Liston.
Yeah, no problem. We really appreciate all the hard work you do for the community, and Libra Fanatic 8, so it's big. I mean, it's gonna get better too, man. So that'll wrap it up for this special episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast. Be sure to comment on the site, recklessdice.com. Send us an email at recklessdice@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or participate in general discussions on Facebook at Reckless Dice. Till next time, thanks for listening, guys.